The Capital Area Dental Society brings to you The Drill Down. We're your hosts, Dr. Shwetha Ramanathan and
Sarah Carter.
Today we're speaking with Dr. Emily Connolly of Mosaic Dentistry. From associateships to owning her own practice and partnering with her husband, her journey is rich with lessons in leadership, family, and growth. Dr. Connolly, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
Do you want to start by telling us about your path into dentistry?
Sure. I am born and raised in El Paso, Texas. I am a true Texan, which if anybody knows anything about that, that seems to be a rarity because we have everybody moving in. I know. But, you know, I think my interest in dentistry, it wasn't like when I was a young child, I knew I wanted to be a dentist, but being born with a cleft lip and palate, I was in and out of various, pediatric dentists, plastic surgeons. As I got into adolescence, I had an orthodontist, and, I felt like I was somewhat a product of dentistry in terms of the good, the not so good, and everything in between. You know, I think from an early age, I remembered being really actually fearful of the dentist. And I don't know if I joke, I'm like, now I might have just been an unruly child and like was not cooperative with my dentist. But I did. I think even to this day, I have like an anxiety about doing dental work on my, like having it done on myself. But, I really felt like having a personal story and attachment to the impact that our care gives to our patients was something that I really valued and appreciated. And then as I got into, undergrad, I had a really awesome dentist back home in El Paso, and he was just like, every time I would go in for my appointments, he was always so relaxed and really didn't seem to have a care in the world. And so he invited me to shadow, and I was able to do that. And I loved the relational aspect of the field just as much as the hands-on and kind of like science and art blend. And then I got for 2 summers in undergrad, I was accepted into a preceptor program through the University of Texas at Houston Dental School. So I got a deeper dive of like, okay, what does dental school look like? And all of that combined really kind of solidified like, okay, this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm. That's a very like robust journey into dentistry. And like, I mean, I know you kind of referenced before, like, I didn't want to be a dentist like ever since I was born, and, you know,
yeah,
like, yeah, this is what I want to do. And it seems like it's really had a personal impact on you. How has it since evolved since like going to dental school? And I know you've been in several associateships as well. Like, how has your journey evolved as a dentist?
Yeah, so I graduated in 2007, which it's like 20 years in 2 years, which is wild to me.
We don't have to do math.
No, we don't. But, you know, but I still feel that the cool thing I think about our profession is like, I still feel in some aspects like new and fresh in it. Like, I love that about our field, how it has evolved so much over really like a short amount of time. But 2007, I got out. And at that point, I had already started to date my now husband, and he still had 2 more years left in dental school. So I thought, well, you know, I was hoping that this would be like the real deal. So I was like, I'm going to stay around in San Antonio for a little bit and wait until he finished. He graduated. And then we went, we both applied to the AGD program in San Antonio. So I practiced in a pediatric, like Medicaid practice for about 2 years, and then went back to AGD. And then that was 1 year. And then at that point, that was in 2010 or so, we moved back to Austin. I moved to Austin. He moved back home to work here because his family was here. And I wasn't opposed. I really didn't have strong ties anywhere. And then I practiced in a private practice for a couple of years, and unfortunately, it didn't turn out as I had hoped. And then at that point, my husband and I decided, like, let's see what is available for us to buy as far as the practice goes. And we were fortunate that in 2012, there was an office that came for sale that was fairly new and needed a lot of TLC in terms of the, I guess, like, investment in the practice, not necessarily like monetarily, but just time and attention to the patients and growth. And the price was very affordable, and it was something that we could see ourselves practicing together. So at that point, we bought the practice, and then I had already transitioned to another Medicaid pediatric, like, kind of busy office. And I was doing part time. So I'd work at my practice on Fridays just to try to build up my patient base. And then also, to build relationships with my team at that point. And then I'd split the difference between that office and my practice. And then my husband went back to school in 2017 to specialize in prosthodontics. And at that point, it gave me a really great opportunity to come to my practice full time, which was really one of the best things that I think happened to me in my dental journey, was when I came here full time for sure.
I want to talk a little bit about those like early experiences when you were working at that, high volume Medicaid practice and the other associateships that you referenced. What kind of leadership position did you have at those offices, or if you had any leadership?
Yeah, good question. So, in my first office, well, I'll kind of separate between like more of the private practice, and then like the Medicaid office. In the private practice, it was a really small office. There were three chairs. I typically would, and I there was two locations. And I would work at the one location all by myself, but because it was such a small team, I think I felt like I was involved a lot in some of the decisions in terms of, if the owner was going to be doing a like salary review or growth conference, let's say on my assistant. So I would chime in about that, which was probably my first time to actually be involved in the back side of things outside of like clinical care. I think I still didn't have a whole lot of empowerment in terms of, how things ran. I could certainly bring concerns to the table, but I think that her and I's relationship, and her being the owner, we also like it wasn't poor, but it wasn't
Ideal.
didn't yeah, it wasn't ideal. Like, it didn't really foster like what I hoped was like a mentor mentee position. And I think I was also faced with seeing a lot of dentistry that I felt was not ideal either. And so that put me in a difficult position to like, how do I manage like telling my boss essentially, like, hey, I don't think this looks good. And so that really, which a lot of times I didn't, sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. So that was that piece. And then in the busier like Medicaid private practice, that not really a lot. I would say that was an office that when I was there, I did my best for my patients. I think I vented a lot more at home in terms of like scheduling considerations or turnover or whatnot. But because it was such a busy office, I didn't really get a whole lot of input on that. So I think it was really, I don't know. I'm sure there was some leadership opportunities there, but I really didn't have a lot of autonomy when it came to that kind of stuff.
So I guess like going f flashing forward to owning Mosaic, how have you internalized those experiences, and like what do you incorporate into your leadership style at this practice, and what have you decided to kind of like leave behind? That's a
Yeah,
big question.
it is. So I feel like a a lot of what I took from both experiences was, I think, where a lot of gaps were just like a lack of like a lack of clarity in terms of the expectations that were set, whether it was systems that were maybe not in place, things that really were outdated, whether it was like equipment or training or whatnot. So I think that that has been an important piece that I know is something that I've taken into like Mosaic in terms of really getting a lot clearer on my expectations on my team. Also like involving the team too in not necessarily, I mean, some decisions, there are some like non-consequential decisions that we will certainly get their input on, but really making them feel like they're part of the actual success of the practice.
That actually leads perfectly into my next question, which is, what makes Mosaic different? And can you talk to us a little bit about any challenges that you've faced as a woman, as a female leader, especially in your ownership journey?
Okay, so first thing, what mo makes Mosaic different? I guess it depends on, the lens you look at it from, right? Like I think Mosaic has evolved in the 12 years that we've had it. And I think some of it is, some of it is our development and mine and my husband's, and then some of it is the team that we have in place. I think that we are constantly, I think, striving to reach for excellence. And that was kind of our theme for this year was excellence. And one of the aha moments was sometimes I think as a practice, we really get in the weeds of trying to like add more and let's do this like differently, or we're going to scrap this. Like, I think that sometimes we add too much on our plate that we have so many things spinning that not one thing gets done. And so we really had to kind of recalibrate this idea of what excellence is. And it really was going back to basics. Like, if we look at a certain system, whether it's our new patient phone call or our collection process, like, what are we doing? And how, like, does it need to be updated? Like, was this before we got this type of automated system, or are we even offering that service anymore? So I think when we just kind of dial down to what we're doing and is it working well for us? Is it helping us serve our goal? So I think in that sense, like, what makes us different is I really feel like as a collective whole, my team has bought in and really is, invested in the overall like health and well-being of the practice. Really, my husband and I are going to always care more about this building than this practice than anybody else. But I'd say that we have a lot of employees that really come like a close second to that. I think that we try to go, above and beyond for our patients, especially since over the last year, we are now officially fee for service. And so I understand and I appreciate that patients, although we will gladly work with their insurance, they ultimately pay more for our care than somebody else. And so what does that look like as far as, does that mean, I'm using a rubber dam on all of the patients because I want to make sure my restorations last as long? Or, what are things that we can give inherent value, and really it's how do you make the patient feel when they first walk in and when they leave? And it's not just when you say goodbye, but like the next day, like, we're checking on them for longer procedures. Like, we bring patients smoothies. And so it's really like about the experience. And I couldn't do that alone. Like, I don't have all the bright ideas or the bandwidth to tackle that. So that's when I think that I really do lean in. So my leadership style is, in that standpoint, is more delegation versus, I think in my earlier years, I used to have to feel like I do everything on my own. Like I'd have to do this, and that. And so the delegation aspect was really, really hard for me.
Maybe let me try and get you to dive deeper on that. Because you're a husband and wife dynamic in the office, sometimes that can lead to, staff being confused on who to listen to. If you can maybe elaborate more on how your style as the woman aspect is different than your husband's style as the male aspect, as the actual bosses of the office. How do you play off of each other? How do you complement each other? How have you worked through that?
Great question, because we bump into that at least once a week in terms of like how our styles differ and to some degree complement. I think that where I have had a big growing edge is because I have just a general desire to have everything happy and like everybody's good. I tend to be a lot more like in the leadership world, like more democratic. So I'm like taking votes, and I'm a lot more checking the pulses of things. And I sometimes don't feel I'm clear in my delivery or what I want. So sometimes I feel like there's a lot more confusion, or maybe we don't get as much action with certain things compared to my husband, who's a lot more of the like, okay, just do this, like call that patient or move that person. Like there's not, I mean, there's thought, but he's a lot more deliberate with his delivery. And so there's really no confusion with that. There's a black and white. So I think where the team plays off of that is sometimes because he is so direct and to the point, there are sometimes team members could think like, oh, he was being short, or is he. I don't think anybody thinks he's in a bad mood because everybody knows that's just his style, but like he's very like he can be easily misunderstood by this is what I want you to do. And so he's not being like a jerk about it, but this is just his
There's no
like
fluff.
no fluff. Versus me, I might make somebody feel good, but then they're kind of like, and what does she want me to do again? So
I can
I
totally relate to that.
yeah. And so I think that there are moments where the two of us, I can be more of a buffer to certain situations. That really does help with kind of easing emotions, I guess, if you will, with team members. But yet, like I think when it comes to Kaveh, like he's if you know exactly what he wants and what he wants you to do.
Is that feedback like something that you guys, like your leadership styles, for example, like is that something you were discussing with your husband, or is that something you're reflecting on, like after you have a conversation with an employee and you're like, hey, like, did I actually say what I wanted to say? Or, like, can you take me through how you think about that?
Like for me, at least, like I am getting a lot more intentional with asking clarification after, like I tell so like an employee what I need. And I'm also trying not to necessarily buffer as much with like a reason unless they ask me. Like I am trying to be more like, hey, assistant, can you retake that x-ray? I need this open. Or can you retake that x-ray? And then I'll go back and say, like, did you have any questions about it? Versus like, because I need to see the margin of blah, 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 blah. Like, I don't know that I'm trying to give almost less information, or almost I felt like I had to justify my position by giving more information to them. So I'm getting a lot more intentional with asking, like, can you tell me, what you heard, or like, can you tell me what I need you to do? And also like, when is a reasonable time for you to get this done for me? And whether or not I agree with that, I'm a lot more like, okay, that seems okay to me, or you know what, I really need it sooner. Could we meet in the middle here? So I'm trying to take a more balanced approach with pulling some of what Kaveh brings into the directness, but then also giving some
like your own
freedom.
Flair to it.
Yeah. And some freedom to the employee that they still, you know, have a say in this too. But, you know, we joke around because, like, we've done various, like, we've taken, like, emotional intelligence classes. We've done different, like, coaching. And so we've touched, you know, throughout our time working together, especially, like, we've talked about all the different leadership styles. Like, and it's really cool also because we really try to empower other people on our team. Like our lead assistant, like we call her our pace setter, like she's a lot more of like our pace setter leader. Like, okay, she sees something, let's go, like let's go and do it, like let's get moving. Versus Kaveh's not really like that, I'm not really like that. So it's nice to really like leverage, especially some of the longer tenured people on our team with some of their skill sets to further complement what Kaveh and I bring to the table.
I'm a really big proponent of DISC profiling, DISC, and I think it's just a really great tool that you can use in your professional life, but I mean it probably will help you in your home life since you seem to be, you know, straddling that pretty well. I think, you know, understanding who you're dealing with, whether it's your employee or your husband, and maybe you have, you know, this is a whole nother podcast probably, but do you have a different personality at home than you do at work? And, you know, are you playing this boss woman, you know, hear me roar role at work? And, you know, are you different at home? So, you know, do you both have to like work really hard to understand how you give and receive information, how you give and receive love, you know, those are all different challenges. So
yeah, and I think it's funny that you say that about the DISC, because at the beginning of the year, we had a hygiene coach and we did DISCs for the whole team. And so like my husband's a D and I'm like a C. And so like, I mean, totally opposite.
And let's tell our listeners a little bit about what DISC is.
Yeah. So, you know, there's different types of, I guess, personality,
it's
assessment.
An HR assessment. It stands for, D is dominant. I is influential. S is steady. And C is conscientious.
Okay.
So, you know, your typical type A CEO kind of role is a D person, a salesperson, you know, a good salesman is definitely an I, influential. S, you know, I'd always liken that to someone that can work for the government, someone that's, you know, really steady, likes a retirement program, you know, that's kind of their gig. And C, conscientious, that is someone that I would say, you know, I, for example, I am a high D, the highest D you can get. I also have a high C.
Okay.
Which is a really interesting mix.
Yeah.
So I can be really, really bossy, but I can be very aware
that you're very bossy.
How I'm making you feel and how I need to maybe shape the information that's coming out of my mouth.
Yeah.
I'm still gonna get my way, but I'm gonna make sure I am aware of how that delivery is coming out. So I'm the kind of person that will write a really direct bullet pointed email. And then I have to work on my opening of hope you're having a great day. Here are the 10 bullets and have a great weekend at the end. You know, I have to work really hard at that. So
I chuckle so much, Sarah, because Kaveh always gives me a hard time, because when I write my emails, like we were writing our financial advisor in these paragraphs. He's like, no, Emily, you need to do like bullet points. And then I was like, yeah, but I want to write. He's like, okay, fine. So like you can say like,
that's so funny,
I hope this
because
email
I've
serves you well. And then I'm like, okay, here are my bullets. And so he's like, good.
I think one
that's
of my
so funny. I've had the same conversation with my husband. I'm like, your emails are so short. Like, aren't you going to ask them how they are and tell them to have a great weekend?
My husband will write like one long run-on text sentence with no breaks. And I think I finally trained him to kind of bullet points, and
Yeah.
it was a proud moment. But anyway,
I think
But
we've
to your
stumbled
point,
onto
like
something.
the home life, like I think since like my daughter was born, I tend to be a lot more like whatever minimal D that I have, that comes out a lot more in the house just because I feel just a like such a strong charge to I guess manage like her schedule and like the home, and I have very strong opinions on like she should be doing this or that or whatnot. And then my husband's like whatever I guess you'd say like I like his silliness and his like I guess flexibility or not flexibility but like that like people person comes out with her a lot more at home. So I think that that's where like it kind of switches off. But I honestly like I try to yeah, I don't know if I necessarily change that much, but
It sounds like to me you're blending a little bit.
yeah, a
You
little
know,
bit.
you're like home Emily versus dentist Emily.
Owner Emily.
Owner Emily, boss Emily.
Yeah, but even owner Emily, like all if one of my employees was like, hey, you know, doctor, can you will you do a video for, you know, our social media? And I'm like, sure, like let's do it. And Kaveh's like, no, count me out. So like, you know, I'll pull that out too.
One thing that I wanted to ask you about personally is I know I've had a lot of experiences, maybe part of it being female, maybe part of it being newer in my career, is like working on my confidence as a provider. And some of that also bleeds into just like managing office staff and the relationships that you have with the team members that you're working with. So one thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, have you ever dealt with feeling undermined by your staff? And if you haven't, you know, what advice would you have for maybe someone like me where finding my voice and feeling, you know, kind of cutting the fluff like you talked about before and just being leaning into like, this is what I want, this is why I want it. Yeah, talk to me a little bit about that and maybe your experiences or advice that you would have.
Like, I don't know. I mean, I think I've been really fortunate that in the time I've been practicing, I feel like the I've always had a fairly high level of, I mean, I take it like I chalk it down to like a level of respect with my from, you know, my, you know, if I had an office manager back then or assistants or hygienist or whatnot, like I feel like they always I felt value, like I felt like what my like diagnosis and treatment planning and all of that, like I always felt valued. I didn't ever feel like my work was being questioned by them. I think where the undermining, and it was almost like a silent undermine, is whenever I would blend more of a like business to like personal relationship with an employee, I felt like there were instances that I could potentially be taken advantage of in terms of, you know, maybe they weren't, maybe there was a pattern of them not being prepared for, you know, various procedures, or they were constantly late. And it was
And
always
is that
like,
because like they're feeling like they're friends with you now and you want,
like because there wasn't really any repercussions, you know, and especially like, and this is really in my office, not necessarily in any of the associate off offices, but really in my office, it's almost like if you're, I mean, think about it, if you go to lunch with your friend and like they're late, oh, no worries, like let's carry on. And you know, and so I think that was a part of it, that it wasn't necessarily, I think it undermined like the authority or my position of being their supervisor, but not necessarily like in, I've heard some people say, you know, oh, an assistant was questioning what I was doing right in front of the patient. And I've never had that experience, and it surprises me that it would happen, but I know it does.
Can I ask you actually to jump back to what you just said? How have you like renavigated those boundaries, like with staff, where you like
Yeah.
you want to be like, hey, I'm the cool boss. Like we can have lunch and it's no worries
Yeah.
if you're a little late. But at the same time, you're running an office where other people are depending on your staff and you're depending on your staff. So what was that like to kind of like redefine the relationship, without, being, I guess, mean about it is one of the worries
Right.
I know that we have.
Yeah. No. And I think it can easily happen, not just because, I think in two scenarios, and I think right now, like I have the two scenarios, like when you're a woman, and I think that we especially being in a, whether or not you're an associate and you're working with another doctor or not, it's so different when you're taking yourself out of dental school, where it's this like microcosm of like instant friendships, to where you are in a setting that you could meet somebody if it's your assistant or hygienist that you have a lot of the similar enjoyments and whatnot. Like it's so easy to fall into that. So you're in this like, you're a female, and then you're in also in an environment where sometimes like if you just move to a new city, right? And like, I need friends. So how I've navigated that, I think whenever in my practice, again, we have like a really close, we have a really like our whole team, it's like a, we really like a family. And so you do have a love and care for all of them. I do. And I think that you have to, how I've overcome that are the times that I would essentially like stick my head in the sand about overlooking concerns about, performance, or overlooking tardiness. Like you have to draw the line and address it right then and there. And then you go back and, not necessarily I have stopped. Like I don't do like I won't ever go have lunch with just one of the employees. Like I don't do that anymore. And I think that that was where I maybe would blur the lines more. So I don't do that. But at the same time, like I invited my whole team to my daughter's birthday party. And so I had some people come, or there's certain special events that we will get invited to, and vice versa. And I think that's okay, as long as you can still maintain the high level of accountability for everybody whenever it comes to whether it's performance reviews or salary, considerations, but then also just day-to-day management of what they do. Like you have to still keep that. Like I have to first be a boss first, and then not even a friend, but like you can call it a colleague, but just, you again, you love and care about this person, but you do have to have that boundary.
Shweta, how are you addressing that at your office? I know you're doing a lot of associate slash boss type roles. Are you handling it any differently over there?
I think it's been a real learning experience. I have a fabulous owner who's mentored me quite a bit. But I also think like when you don't have a owner that's kind of like on the ground with you, your leadership style inevitably is going to be different than a different, like another person. And honestly, just like finding what my leadership style is has been a little journey in itself. And I've also done kind of like what Emily mentioned earlier, where it's like, you think like you can have lunch with someone or you can powwow with someone, but honestly, people start noticing things like that, and you want to make sure that you're treating everyone the same and having those boundaries and figuring out what they are. I think oftentimes I've wanted to be agreeable and easy to work with and personable and all of those, adjectives. But that has also kind of bitten me in the rear end when I'm trying to be like to be more of a leader in the office and giving feedback to like, hey, this is maybe what we could have done in this situation instead. And so I think it's a really fine line that I'm learning, honestly, still how to straddle and getting feedback from my owner or like getting feedback from my office manager. I think that's been really crucial. Just asking like, hey, how did you think I did? And that's been something that I've worked on over time to build those relationships so that I feel comfortable getting that feedback because I don't know everything. And asking people that I work with who I trust who have a lot of experience in these leadership roles has really been able to kind of shape me into the leadership position that I'm trying to take in the office.
Emily, do you have opportunity or have you carved out time for your staff or everyone in your office to be able to give you what I like to call 360 feedback? It's part of the review process for the boss to, have a quarterly, semi-annual or annual review with their employees. But I always like to ask, are you getting a review?
Yeah, no, and that's great that you brought that up. the whole review, performance like evaluation or whatnot, that has evolved countless times in my practice from where we would have employees like tally up numbers and like they'd get a score and then, and then that was not very effective. And then we've done more like narrative types. I'm familiar with the 360. We've done that before. That's not actively part of the practice, but I do think that there's a lot of value in getting feedback from the team like directly. And honestly, like the people that would be more, I think in one of the questions is like in our latest review is something is like how can I better like what am I doing now to like support you in what you're trying to achieve? And then what could I be doing differently in order to help you like reach the goals that you're wanting to? So it's not a full like rate me whatnot, but I do want to know if the guidance, the instructions or whatnot, even my communication style, how well is that working for people? Because everybody's different. And so some people do really well with how I present things and other people don't. But no, to answer your question, right now it's not like the full 360, but I think it's a great tool. I really do. And it's
And I
weird,
actually.
when we did do that, I will say that it made I. There's maybe two people that I feel gave really honest feedback. The others, it was like, oh, you're doing great. We love it here. Everything is
Well, so
wonderful.
I was gonna add, it was actually my owner that suggested to me that, like, hey, you can always just ask, a couple trusted people, how do they think you're doing? And I got into the habit of like picking a couple people who I trust and who I really respect and like asking them, hey, like, what do you think I could do better as a dentist, or what do you like about the things I do? And I always have to clarify, like, hey, I'm not just fishing for compliments. I really want you to tell me, like, what you actually think I can improve on? Because it's very hard to, it's one thing to say you have an open door policy, and then it's one and a very different thing to actually enforce that and act upon that so people feel comfortable enough to tell you.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, let's maybe get into the nitty-gritty of this family practice ownership. You're a part of an elite clique, we're gonna call it. On our podcast this season, we've had the Kimes marriage situation. We've had
The
the
autos.
Ottos are coming, and now we have you. So we'd like to get into like the nitty-gritty of owning your practice with your husband. How do you divide the duties, of the day between home and work? And, what's your approach to that? And how do you still like each other at the end of the day?
I
Did you
know,
have any
right?
hesitancy going into work business together?
At the time, and no, like I think I was really, in that first like, oh crap, like we're doing this. It really, like, I think there was a peace of mind knowing that we were in it together. I think it was a great situation that thought I could work full time while essentially my job where I was at was feeding like our home life, and his role was just to really get like Mosaic up and running. I think that in the first like 5 years, even though it was a practice that was already established, there like we learned, I mean, I had never interviewed anybody, and like we made some really poor choices of people who work for us. And I'm blessed that nobody like stole from us or anything like that. But you know, there were times where we'd have some upset patients because of, you know, various personality things. But needless to say, like I felt like in the first like 5 years, we were kind of in the trenches together. So there was a sense of like camaraderie, and it's like, okay, we're going back to the office over the weekend. So that was like, I think, even though it was tough, like financially and time-wise, but number one, we didn't have a child back then. So that's a whole other ball of wax. And then, you know, things started getting more stable. We just started, I think, getting a little bit more experience as owners under our belt. Then he goes to San Antonio for his residency. And so that gave me, in those 3-ish, 3.5 years, gave me a really great opportunity, I think, to grow in my confidence, not only as a practitioner, but also a leader, and also just take more ownership of the team and just feel more belonged, like belonging with everybody. And then I think when things hit the fan was when he came back from residency, and it's like this whole like acclimation of
Like we have
you
to work
know,
together now.
yeah, we have to work together. It's so that's a different dynamic. And also like his mindset and like his knowledge has like quadrupled just from what he knew. And so he has this vision of how we should be running things. And I think there is a level of frustration because it kind of felt like we're just kind of the status quo. And so we, yeah, it was really, I mean, it's been really hard. And then throw in like having a kiddo, 3 years ago, it's, and then also we are just so different as humans. I think that it has tested like our marriage more than what I imagined it would. And yeah, you're right. There are some days that I understand when people say like love is a verb and it truly is a choice, because there are some times where I don't think we like each other very much just because of various interactions. But again, we keep choosing each other over and over again in the midst of some of the hardest days. And I think it's difficult when I had this vision of what motherhood and ownership would look like, and it really didn't, it wasn't like that. And then also like the role
Can you
that he
actually say
had.
some, can you expand on that a little bit more? Like, what did you expect out of ownership and motherhood? And what is like the IRL, in real life aspect of that?
You know, it's funny because I had a dentist, she's a CADS member, but she texted me this week and she was like, "Hey, you know, I'm expecting, and like, can we meet? Because I just want to know how you do it all, and like, does it ever get easier?" And I was like, "No, it doesn't get easier." You
She
know,
can
for
catch you
me,
on this episode.
I know, right? And I was like, "Well, it's not really a text thing. We're gonna have to grab, you know, some food to go over it." You know, what did I think? What did I think motherhood and ownership would be like? It's not like I necessarily, maybe that's why I didn't really have a full explain, like maybe I wasn't as prepared as I should have been. I am unique in that, like, my mom, at the time she lived with us, so she played like a huge role in childcare, which gave me peace of mind. We were also able to support and afford like a nanny that came in and helped. So the childcare aspect was great, but it was just this, I felt like I had two full-time jobs at the same time, and it, and then on top of all of my other extracurriculars that I had, that
And you have a lot of extracurriculars too, like with organized dentistry and
yeah.
your outside of work leadership.
I do. And, you know, it was like everything was important to me. And I had a really hard time putting a weight of one over another. And because I felt like if I had, like, I was juggling balls in the air, and it's like if I let one down or let my guard down, even when I was on maternity leave, like I was in constant contact with the office, like because I would hear it if there was a conflict or if Kaveh was stressed or whatnot. So like I don't really feel like I got a break from either. And I think that when I just accepted that this really is the number one, it's my choice. Like, you know, I could have said, you know what, like we should sell, and like I'll just go be an associate, or can we manage and I work part-time? I don't know. But I think for me it was a huge like unraveling of the previous 8 years, where all I really had to worry about was the office, making sure I was healthy and well, and like making sure Kaveh was, and then among everything else, like friends and try to like help like to nourish that. And so then when you enter in another human who is completely helpless and needs like your attention all the time, it really was like this unraveling and this like awakening of, okay, Emily, like really, like what is most important? What is it that I need to say no to that I would really like to do, but if it means cooking, you know, ultimately it's my daughter, like, you know, what comes over her.
That's like something that even I think about, and it's like it's very hard to, you know, see yourself like juggling all of these things. And now, you know, I don't have a kid, and so it's like I'm really just trying to take care of myself and my family, and sometimes that can be a lot, especially when you've had a full day at work. How, when you were going through all those things, like how did you find that balance, and how are you trying to like pour back into your cup to make sure, you know, you're able to be there and be present for all of these things that you have hold responsibility of?
So I think the biggest, you know, honestly, the biggest change was this acceptance that I don't have to do everything. And I had to let go of this sense of control both at work and at home, because I was getting to the point where, so I think that's one thing. So at work, we at that point had an employee who I think she had been with us 4-ish years, but she'd been in dentistry for a really long time. And she was really showing phenomenal leadership, and also just I had an immense amount of respect and trust for her. And so we kind of elevated her position to more. She likes to call herself director of operations, but I delegated a lot of things that, you know, in my mind, I'm like, oh, well, I can just pay the bills. Like it takes, like I can just write a check. It didn't seem like it was that big of a time suck, if you will, but it was still something on my list. And so when I delegated a lot more of those type of tasks, or can you order lunch for our monthly meeting, or figure out lunch, you know, whatever. And so it really, not necessarily like heavy lifting work, but just on my mind, it was just something else I didn't need to do. So that was big. And then I think at home, really being more clear with my needs to Kaveh in terms of support and help. And I still am like not great at it, because again, the control and freak, because again, like I want to do things, like I want my daughter's schedule to be like this, and I have this vision, like lights need to be at a 20% and not a 50% or whatever. So I think I've grown on just letting that go, like the rigidity of me and this, like it has to be this way. Like it was really only hurting myself, and it was creating so much tension with me and Kaveh that, to I think Sarah's question, like it, we would argue at home about home stuff, and then we would argue at home about or at work about work stuff. So it was like never ending, and it was to the point where, like neither one of us were happy. And so I realized again, one of my biggest thing is like I had to stop controlling everything else. And I really just had to work on what was inside of me, like what are the things I'm telling myself and what is it that I can do?
That's very powerful because I feel like that's even not being an owner and being an associate, that's still stuff that I struggle with like you really take some of the work that you do in the office or in the clinic home with you, and you're mulling and you're thinking and like trying to find those boundaries of like, hey, this is when I'm gonna just like focus on home stuff and this is what I'm gonna do to take care of myself. One
Think
thing I
about
want.
even with like patients, right? Like I'm sure you've had those patients where it's like you see their name on the schedule and you're
You're
like,
immediately
oh,
anxious.
like this is not good. And then it's like, I know they're gonna. So even with that, like this aspect of like, okay, look, if I just separate myself from whatever storm, whatever they're going through, and just know like, okay, my focus here is to be kind, loving, understanding, give the best care. And then everything else, like I think I just stopped taking that personally because that's also such a heavy mental weight. And now, and like I think our profession, we're finally starting to shed light on the mental health and well-being in our profession, which is, I think, it's been going on for a really long time, or lack thereof of mental health and well-being, because there's so many
As a
different
provider,
things. Yeah, as a provider, for sure.
I want to ask you, this is kind of a general question, but women have made a lot of strides in dentistry so far. We see something as simple as like class sizes in dental school being some of them being more majority women than they are men. But then we're also talking about struggles with like leadership in the office and being undermined or whatever comes with being female. I guess I want to ask you, what do you hope that the future of dentistry looks like for women?
You know, I think I hope that women have a like I think that just in our DNA, we really do have such a great ability to naturally connect with people. And I think that they're in our profession. We do have the ability to have more flexible schedules in terms of hours worked, days worked, even if, you know, I think even in the specialty world, like in terms of seeing more, you know, I joke, like I get excited when I see a female oral surgeon because they're not super common. And I would say like there's a reason, you know, I get it, you know, because residency is really rigorous. And if you have children or want to have children, like there's something that has to give. And so I understand that. But I think that I want women to have a platform to build the confidence, especially like right out of school, not necessarily like in clinical. Clinical is important, but I think in communication and relationship aspect, and to really have this sense of like a greater sense of self in that they can, that you are respected. And I also think patients really do gravitate towards female providers, sometimes more than men. Like I think that we do, there are certain aspects of our characters and just our personalities that do make dental visits potentially more pleasant and calming for some people. And so I think just leaning into that, also the community aspect, like I would hope that, you know, it's just our field is too I guess small to like have like a competitive edge over one another too. Like I think that there's so much power. There's like power in numbers, right? And so when you have a colleague that is struggling, or to your point, it's like, hey, you know, I had this situation. What would you do? Or can you know, this is what I did. I mean, and so there's more like camaraderie versus like this competition of like, I'm not gonna tell you X, Y, or Z. Like we're
Right.
all in it together.
Resource keeping, yeah.
And I also think that there's different avenues for women, you know, as well as like as far as, yeah, you can do general practice, you know, there is you know, speaking, like lecturing, there's, you know, coaching. I mean, there's a lot of different avenues that women can explore and still have so much fulfillment and impact. Like I think women have an ability to make a huge impact on this field.
I really like that because I think now, you know, back then I guess the conversation was just like getting women into degree like professions
Yeah,
with
general,
higher
yeah.
degrees, you know, and then now it's like there's still limitations and trying to kind of recalibrate and have conversations about what that might be and how support looks like now. I guess one thing I want one question I want to ask you before we end is where do you kind of see yourself 5 years from now, and how would you want to feel professionally and personally?
Good question. So, like in 10 days, Kaveh and I are going to be doing a 3-day retreat. It's a applied strategic planning retreat, which we did this 5 years ago. So we will be un unraveling that. But you know,
Breaking news.
I know, right? You guys hear first before I even write it down on paper. And it really is like you write a letter to yourself. And I did, again, I did that 5 years ago, and that was probably the one, the most powerful
What did you write about
exercise.
5 years ago?
Yeah, so I wrote, again, my daughter was not in sight, but at that point I had written about going fee for service. I wrote that we would have bought land and build a like a build up like a stand up practice. Those are the two big things. Kaveh and I would have traveled. We did end up going fee for service. We actually did buy the land. The build out didn't work out, but we ended up selling it, which turned out to be like a really great financial gain for us. So I think that is something that I believe everybody should go through because it does, to your point, if I were to think, it's really like a feeling, you know, I think in 5 years, like I would like to feel at the end of each day, like a sense of like I don't, like fulfillment on what I did that day was enough. I think that I'd like to get to the point where I'm not second guessing, like, oh, should I have done this or that? But like, just know that, you know, how I led my team, how I was with my family, how I was with my patients. You know, I want to give. I think it's all about self-love and have that high level of self-love that what you did was enough. I'd like to have, you know, really intentional time with truly like the main important people and things in my life, whether it's exercise, friends, family, or whatnot, but just have a clear sense on that. And, you know, I mean, if we have a new practice, that's great. I don't want to feel, like I'm running like a rat race. And I think that my first like 10 years, that's kind of what I felt.
Shweta, how about you? What would
Where do I
you,
see myself 5 years from
yeah, what are
now?
you going to ask of yourself to feel in 5 years?
I think I would echo some of what Emily said in terms of like feeling fulfilled, and feeling like what I did was enough. I think being introspective is a great thing, because it's really good to go home and evaluate, take note of like what happened that day. But I also think, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. And so it's like, you know, I could have done all these other things, but this is what I decided to do. And just like feeling secure in myself, both professionally and personally, knowing like this is what I bring to the table and feeling okay with that. I want to just work on like acceptance of myself, both professionally and personally. And you know, I do want to continue to grow. I think a growth mindset is great, but I also think like we should also work to just accept ourselves for who we are and feel fulfillment personally.
Yeah, I think being the elderly one here of the bunch, I would say later into my 40s, I would say the theme should be give yourself grace. That's the biggest thing that I've learned in you know, the important decades of, you know, women in business and motherhood, basically 20s, 30s, and 40s. They're all different. You learn different things in each decade, but this one's been give yourself grace. So I think that that's, you know, that's what I would champion, or that's what I would give to both of you if I could.
And I think to piggyback on that, and that was one of the, you know, a book that I read that I really liked, but it was all about the practice of gratitude, that it's like you can have gratitude, but there, this book challenged at the end of every day, write three things that you're grateful for. And studies show that if you do that on a daily basis, and that's just part of your routine, how much it changes your mindset. And I think that to that point, like, I think in 5 years, like, I do hope that I, like, I do have not only the grace aspect, I 100% agree and echo, but also just the gratitude, because I think it's so easy to what's the word? To be, yeah, it's so hard to, it's so easy to be critical about about yourself, about others. But when you just step back and you just reflect, like, hey, you know, I didn't get stuck in traffic today. I mean, it could be little, but the practice of gratitude is something that I really, really would love, like, to be ingrained in me.
Okay, we're going to move to that oh so fun segment that we love to call What the Suck. Emily. What has sucked the most along your journey, and how did you suck it up?
I think, honestly, the in my practice journey, hands down, hiring and firing, like hiring especially, just the dollars and the time that go into, and especially now, I mean, it's a lot different than it was then. But yeah, so I mean, how did I suck it up? I think I really, like, again, I look back on myself and I started to be really, really clear on who I needed in that role and not settle.
I like that.
I like it too. And lastly, we like to leave the listeners with a tangible. Do you have a specific book, person, CE course that you can recommend to listeners maybe going through some of the same issues or subject matters that we've talked about on this podcast that would help them?
So I really liked, so the book I referenced is called The Gap in the Gain. It's by Dan Sullivan. I really love that one because I think as humans, we're really always focused about the gap in terms of, like, how much farther do we have versus the gain? How far have we already come? And it's a really, it's a pretty easy read. And then it's also super tangible to take to not only if you're an owner, if you're an associate, or just in life. I think that was a really, I think it was a really, that was a great book. I also, like, for me, I also try to stay educated on the world's happening. So my favorite podcast is, like, it's a 30-minute deal. It's called The Daily. And so I can get, like, a snippet of, like, whatever's happening in the world. And then if you want to do more of, like, the, I don't know. The other podcast I like is The Diary of a CEO. So that's been super relevant because the host will have topics on, like, financials, on AI, on just other, like, I guess, public interest, but also some parenting things have been on there. So I really liked those two.
Awesome. I like all of those. We'll have to check those out. Yes. Dr. Conley, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's honest, empowering, and full of practical takeaways. For those who want to learn more about you or Mosaic Dentistry, where can they find you?
Well, I do have an Instagram handle. It's mscon8. You can also email me too. So I don't know how we're posting it, like, on the podcast, but you can always include my email on there too.
We'll drop it in the show notes.
Yeah, cool. Yes. Or you can find me at Mosaic Dentistry. You can, I mean, again, couldn't be where I'm at today without my mentors and the people who have helped lift me up. And I hope that I can do the same thing for young dentists, older dentists out there, because again, we're not in it alone. So I am open and I would love to hear from anybody if they have specific questions on what we talked about.
Thank you so much. If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. See you on the next episode.